This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County with a brand new series of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, the monthly show produced by the Cultural Alliance for WPKN, the second Monday of every month. We're starting out this new series with a conversation with Adja Cowens, an internationally celebrated photographer living quietly in our midst in Bridgeport. Actually, Adja asked if he could interview me during the Bridgeport Art Trail. Somehow the logistics didn't work out, so I thought it might be an interesting way of starting out this new series on WPKN by having a conversation. First, I think I should introduce Adja, and we can take it from there. So Adja is, as Maurice Berger in the New York Times described him in reviewing Adja's recent book of photographs, Personal Vision, published just 1 year ago, an important but underknown photographer with a varied career working as a Navy photographer, apprentice to Gordon Parks, documentarian in 1960s Harlem, and as a Hollywood portrait and on-set photographer. Well, to paint a little bit more of an extensive portrait of Adja, I'd like to read the introduction written by or for Carrie Mae Weems, another very influential photographer, for her interview with Adja in Bomb magazine in July 2014. Right there, it was written, Adja Cowens is a renowned fine arts photographer and painter whose works have been shown by the Metropolitan Museum of Art, International Museum of Photography, Museum of Modern Art, the Studio Museum of Harlem, the Cleveland Museum of Art, Harvard Fine Art Museum, Detroit Art Institute, and numerous other art institutions. Adja's photographs were highlighted in the exhibit Committed to the Image, Contemporary Black Photographers, at the Brooklyn Museum of Art in 2001. And that year, he was awarded the Lorenzo Il Magnifico alla Carriera, in recognition of a distinguished career at the 2001 Florence Biennale of Contemporary Art. And then in 2016, as we've said, Glitterati published a book of his work, Personal Vision. Adja attended Ohio University, where he received a BFA in photography. He furthered his education at the School of Motion Picture Arts and also the School of Visual Arts in New York. While serving in the U.S. Navy, he worked as a photographer before moving to New York, where he later worked with Life magazine photographer Gordon Parks and fashion photographer Henri Clark. In the mid-60s, Adja began to achieve success as a still photographer for the motion picture industry. He now has more than 30 feature films to his credit, including Nothing But a Man, Cotton Comes to Harlem, The Way We Were, On Golden Pond, The Cotton Club, Dirty Dancing, City Hall, and many more. Adja has traveled the world and has worked all over this country and is now a resident and productive artist at the Reeds Arts Building in Bridgeport, one of some 45 artists living and working in the building. And we were first introduced by Liz Squillaci as we were trying to get the Reeds Building as a whole and individual Reeds artists more involved in the Cultural Alliance. We actually recently included Adja in our new YouTube series, Artists Talks. Adja was one of six artists we recorded at the City Lights Gallery's show, Pattern. That was co-curated by Suzanne Catchmar and The Nest's Jane Davila. So you can see and hear Adja talking about his work on that video on our Artist Talks YouTube site. Well, after that, Adja made the surprising proposal that he interview me. initially as part of the Bridgeport Art Trail, but as I said, the logistics didn't quite work out. So, Adja, welcome. Thank you for suggesting this conversation. So I'd love to start just by asking you, how come you are right here in our midst in Bridgeport?
Well, it was quite by accident that I came to Bridgeport. I lived in New York for, 45 years, and I had a loft in Lower Manhattan, and the rent was getting ready to escalate beyond my pocketbook at the time. So a friend of mine said they're looking for artists in Bridgeport to help change the way Bridgeport is perceived. So I said, well, okay, I'll go take a look at the places. And I first came up here, I said, no, it's not going to happen. I'm not moving to Bridgeport. I'm a New York guy. But then I went to the South Beach, and that was it. The scene of the water, the bay, and all that just took me away. And so I said, well, I'll get it. I'll take a place. I don't care. The ocean's there, the bay. And so I moved here in 2006.
And it's worked out.
Oh, it's worked out fantastic because I go back and forth to New York on the train, which is very easy and allows me to keep my businesses going in New York.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific.
Yeah. I love it. New York is an interesting place, but I think Bridgeport, in some ways, excuse me, is even more interesting because there are a lot of things that can happen here. You know, you have the waterfront, you have the trains coming from New York here, and a lot of commercial things are possible, I think, here in Bridgeport. So that sold me, too, the idea that something was beginning to happen. You know, it wasn't already set in stone. So that allowed for a lot of creativity.
That's tremendous. I mean, as you know, we are very concerned also about working with the city, making sure that artists have the support that they need. There seems to us to be an amazing body of artists here. We've got, five artist spaces. You're at the Reeds Art Center, which is an art space where artists live and work. We've got The Nest, which is a studios, I believe, 70 artists working in The Nest. They say now they're being priced out of their building as they've they're so successful, and now they're looking for another space. And then we have, 305 Knowlton.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the American Fabrics building. And it looks as if Liz and Ruben and a few others are now trying to build a sense of a space in the arcade, as there are now, I think, 5 or 6 artists with studios in the arcade. So, so it's something I think we recently just lost this last week as part of a conference that we're preparing for on creative placemaking. We had a meeting, and thank you so much for coming along to that. We had about close to 40 people. And John Cusano ran a conversation about what people were feeling about Bridgeport in terms of moving it forward. And it's so interesting how you have the tension between the people who've been here for a long time, know many of the stories, feel that sort of see the opportunities, but also see the problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, many newcomers, and especially the young people who really see the opportunities the way that you did and are really working hard to build that up. So I hope we can
do what we can. Well, I think it's interesting because you have, I think, about 13 or 14 different neighborhoods in the city of Bridgeport, which is just phenomenal, and the range of people And the range of cultures is just fantastic. So I think that's part of one of the reasons that I think that Bridgeport has the possibility of becoming really a center, not only for art, but I think for culture and art.
Right, right. That was another interesting point from last week, was people pointing to the many, many neighborhoods and the many cultures, and how we really need something to pull people together, to make them realize that they are part of this wonderful historical center that has been the birthplace of so many things. It really is a kind of a cradle of innovation. And but, you know, I-95, which is blamed for so many things, I know, right. Sort of somebody mentioned how it's divided broadly the north side from the south side. And I like your idea of artists being involved in doing a healing parade. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You say something more about that? Was that your idea?
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking when I first came here, because people were saying, well, we don't know who all the artists are. And I thought that it would be wonderful to have one day a year where artists from all the different communities could come together and have an artist's parade. Mm-hmm. They're always having these other kinds of parades. And I thought that with an artist parade, people could create their outfits or whatever they wanted to do. But I thought that that would bring people and communities together through the art. And having a parade be, I think, one of the best ways to do that.
That would be great. So we at the Cultural Alliance are missing the fact that there used to be an arts council in Bridgeport, and I think we need somebody like that, an arts culture, mm-hmm. An arts council that can do something like that, can really organize mm-hmm. something that like that locally. I can't think of another group who would be able to do that, mm-hmm. but I do think that's...
Well, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with you uh-huh. was the fact that you are a organizer in a very scientific way, almost like a surgeon. Huh. From listening to you and watching you the other day when we had the meeting, you were not talking, you were writing things down, and you were writing bullet points that you heard from different people. And I think that that takes a certain kind of skill and a certain kind of listening and a certain kind of understanding of people. And that's kind of how I see you and why I wanted to talk with you, because I felt that there was something there that people need to know and understand about what it is that you actually do.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I guess I do. I don't know how much I put it into practice, but I do think that listening is important, and going way back, I think I've got that kind of mind that likes to synthesize, likes to listen to different voices and see what they have in common. I say I'm very proud of my three boys because they're all basically scientists, but they all love the arts. They each play different musical instrument, and they understand that what we call the arts and what we call the sciences are very much related at core. They're both about exploring the world and trying to find a way of articulating, you know, a personal vision about what you see in the world. Mm-hmm. And growing up in England, our education system was very divided. So, you know, at the age of 16, you basically had to decide only on three subjects you wanted to study for 2 years, and then you'd apply for university just to do one of those. And I kind of wanted to be a scientist, but I messed up making my copper sulfate crystals. So you had to get your practical and you had to get your theory. I don't know what I did wrong, but I got very bad grades in the chemistry. So I kept. So I had to go into the arts. I mean, I loved English, but I had to leave the sciences behind. And I think I've fostered that with my kids, and so certainly love to listen to points of view and try to incorporate them as much as I can.
Do you think that some of your concepts and ideas of listening came from your family background? I mean, what was your family background like? Your own mother and father?
Well, I don't know
how they taught you. What did they
teach you? My father was, you know, they were both English working class. My father was a bricklayer. My mother came from a farm background. Neither of them had much of an opportunity, so it was a classic, you know, they wanted to encourage us to, I know my father was determined that I wouldn't, quote, work, get my hands dirty or so on, so he was really pushing me that way. I don't think so.
Then how did you fall into the arts? What got you interested in the arts?
Probably in high school with my friends. I just remember going to art exhibits. Now, I grew up in Cambridge, which was a very privileged area. I mean, I was working class, but, you know, we had fantastic world-class galleries, and the university music scene was tremendous. So, I don't know, something in my brain got stimulated there. I don't know. But then, so in college, I was basically doing English, and then I was very, getting narrower and narrower, trying to specialize. That's how the English at that point really were working on, I don't know, I guess they believed in, to get expertise, you really had to specialize in one area. But then I was fortunate, again, in having the opportunity of coming over to Duke University on an exchange program. And the American system was just, boy, was that great. I took American art, American music, American literature, American history, really no science courses, but pretty broad, and I just so loved the experience that I went back home, did a master's in American studies, and then came back to Brown and did a PhD in American civilization. But there it was putting together literature and painting and architecture. So still within the arts, but fascinated by, within a period, the period of, early 20th century America, what was happening in the literary arts, you could see mirrored in architecture and in painting.
Were you ever inspired when you were studying the American way of life? Were you ever inspired to be creative in an artistic way, like architecture or writing? Or
actually, I was kind of interested in being an architect, but I really could not draw. I'm a terrible. I just could not. You make a figure. Only later did I realize that many architects use computers these days and CAD systems.
Was it about architecture that grabbed your imagination?
I think partly my father was a builder, so I spent a lot of time growing up going around buildings, getting a sense of buildings as they were being built, you know, from a big hole in the ground to seeing the structure going up. So I was interested in that, in just the way that buildings were put together, mm-hmm. I guess. And I do see it as a kind of one of those practices that bring together so many other arts. I mean, I think to be a successful architect, you certainly have to understand, engineering to start with, and the classic history of architecture. But then you also have to have an interest in people, in how people move, how people use buildings, how buildings can really encourage certain ways of living, ways of thinking. So I was fascinated by that.
Well, in listening to you, I think that you are an architecture of culture, because what you do is a kind of architecture. You're bringing together all these different concepts and ideas and people to make a cohesive kind of niche or cohesive center where something can happen, which is very architectural.
I guess so. I worked in Washington, D.C. for close to 10 years on a very exciting project, which was basically a response to the Internet. A number of national institutions were national arts and academic institutions were a little baffled by what was the promise of the Internet. This was in the mid-90s, just as the World Wide Web was being created. And I know there was a group that was being organized in Washington, the National Endowment for the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities, the American Council of Learned Societies, and other groups were just trying to figure out, well, what is the impact of the Internet going to be on arts and culture? And this was a time also when Al Gore and Bill Clinton were proposing a white paper on the government's approach to the what they call the information infrastructure. And I think many of us were perturbed that there was no mention of the arts and culture in that white paper. So this group really came together to try to formulate a plan of action. I mean, the big promise of the Internet, it seemed, was that after years of all of these disciplines breaking apart, the Internet had the promise of bringing people together. So it was naturally something that I was interested. I remember one of the people I was working with described the scenario of a wealthy person who had been, or a wealthy family who had been collecting paintings and books and documents, had a long family history. If they died and they had no direct place for the work to go, the museum would come in and would take away the paintings. The archives would come in and take away the papers. The libraries would come in and take away the books. And they would then all be cataloged and described in, you know, traditional archive and library and museum terms. And the fact that they form the fabric of someone's life and of a family's history would be forgotten. And we thought that the promise of bringing those different cataloging systems together into one unified approach would help answer this sort of ongoing fracturing of our culture. So our job, the organization that we formed with unwieldy name of the National Initiative for a Networked Cultural Heritage, NINCH for short, brought together arts organizations, the museums, scholars, information technologists, in order to figure out both technically and also in terms of the culture of how we were used to organize, you know, cataloging systems and our approaches, how we could sort of bring all of that together. So that for me was a natural, because there I was bringing IT people together with the museums and the libraries and the scholars and artists. So it was very rewarding.
So it seems to me that you've been at this organizing of cross concepts and ideas to make a whole of something to happen. You've been at this for quite a while.
I guess so. Not particularly consciously. I guess it's just the way things go. Mm-hmm. I mean, the nice thing is that, well, the Ninch, eventually it was an underfunded non-profit. We lasted close to 10 years, but it finally could not afford to continue, and we moved up here to Connecticut. My wife was in publishing and found a job here. And eventually I found my way to the Cultural Alliance and found that so far we don't have the IT, but just wait. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we are trying to work hard to bring individual artists and cultural nonprofits, both from the arts museums, art galleries, together with humanities organizations, historical societies, history museums, together with for-profits, creative businesses, so that they all can figure out how they should be working together more effectively.
Do you see a sort of not a schematic, but how do you see this end product in your mind? How do you see this end product of bringing all these people together? How do you see that working?
Well, I guess what we're trying to do now with a conference that we're organizing in late January, it's a creative placemaking conference. And creative placemaking is really the term that's been applied to exactly this area where you bring town planners and economic development directors together with artists and representatives from cultural organizations and citizens together to look at how a place, a town, a neighborhood can be made more livable, which is basically... this reminds me of one of my favorite quotes of Frank Lloyd Wright, who, when was talking about building economical buildings, so I think ecos means place, and an economy is looking at how you bring together all the things that make a place valuable. So an economy in many ways is, as he said, it depends on the number of things that you value. What do you value? So how are you including qualities of high value in a house? So it's really how much you include. And he was saying that a true economy is one that emphasizes, it's not cheapness, it's value. It's getting as much value as you can in a particular place. So in this case, it's bringing the creativity of artists and those in the arts and cultural worlds together with developers, with town planners, with economic development directors, to try to bring, you know, higher quality to the places that we live in the belief that places actually do affect how we behave, how we think, how we work with it, how we work with each other. It's basically believing in the environment as a factor in making you the best person you can be and making our communities the best we can be. I think increasingly we understand the economic value of the arts and culture for our towns. Now, we've recently done a couple of public meetings in which we've reported out on, I think it's the fifth study, yes, it's the fifth study that Americans for the Arts has done on the economic impact of the arts, in which they actually survey, you know, the amount of money that people who come to events spend locally. So there's a clear economic, you know, straight economic value, just the money that people spend.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite clear that when you have an auditorium like the Klein, where you have art galleries, where you have a body of artists, you are raising the quality of life in terms of activities that are going on that help you discuss, consider what's important about where you're living and how you can affect the place that you're living.
Mm-hmm. So the art affects how people feel and how they think about themselves. Like if an artist does a piece in a sculptured building where the architects come together with the artist to use the art in the building, then that's like public art.
Right.
And people, everyone can experience it as opposed to hanging a painting on a wall.
Right.
You know, yeah. Right. Well, it sounds like a great idea of that you're working on, David. It's like a big human alphabet soup.
Well, yeah. Let's I'm reminded that we need to remind our listeners that they're listening to our monthly Spotlight on Arts and Culture. This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County with our guest, Adja Cowens. And at this point, so let's take a short musical break. Let's listen to some more Dexter Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
So this is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County with our monthly spotlight on arts and culture with our guest, Adja Cowens, who is... we're in the midst of a conversation about the role of the Cultural Alliance in bringing different parts of both the community and... the arts and culture together to improve where we're living. So, yes, I think, Adja, should I just continue a little? Just
I would like you to, after we have this alphabet soup
right,
all mixed up here together, I would like for you to talk about how that relates to the feeling in the community, the spiritual aspect and the political and aspect of those types of settings?
Well, I think one answer is to say that in many ways the arts help to provide a means for people to find a voice, to find themselves. We know that the arts in schools, in education, is critical for giving individuals, for giving kids a sense of value in themselves, in developing their own voice. And I think, at large, that is a role that the arts certainly have in the community, is to create spaces for individuals to be able to express their own sense of what's valuable to them, what's valuable to them about the place that they are living in.
I think these arts, I think maybe you should explain, you're not just talking about the visual arts, but you're talking about the whole...
Absolutely, yes. I mean, artists, certainly for us, it means visual artists, but it also means musicians, theatrical artists, performing artists. I think it's pretty wide open. It's actually curious, when I first started, and, we're a membership organization, help individuals publicize their work, and then once they are a member, we work with them to help them with their career in whatever way we can. And it's interesting how to hear from so many of our artists how it's hard for them to realize that they really are an artist. It's hard for people to be able to call themselves an artist. They clearly have a vision. They clearly have a way of perceiving the world that they want to communicate with others, but somehow it's hard to feel validated. So, you know, they're offered a show, they have two shows, they are given a stage to perform on, and eventually they feel comfortable with the fact that they do have this gift, this ability to somehow express themselves how others are feeling. I mean, that's really, I think, the power of the artist, is that it's not that they themselves are talking about themselves, but through their own perception of the world, their own understanding of the world, they are able to speak for others, not necessarily for everyone, mm-hmm. but for a group of people. And I think that's the value, certainly for me, in working with artists, is appreciating their, in many different ways, sort of, it's a kind of super sensitive awareness of their surroundings, of relationships, and then their ability to put that into some kind of form or shape. Certainly, seeing your own work and hearing you speak about your work, you, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, have this sense of being able to capture moments in your photographs that speak to either a way of feeling or a kind of a way of capturing a spiritual realization of a certain moment that mm-hmm. speaks to a deeper truth. You know, we often talk about those moments that speak about larger moments, eternal perceptions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that for me, the artist is a translator. It's not so much about me, Adger, the person, as it is the spiritual part of me, the sensitive so-called area, how you interpret something, how you feel about something, to be able to pass that on. You can't hold on to it, so you become a conduit, or you become a translator of, you know, that. And the better you are at it, I think, the more you're able to translate what's coming through you, the better it is in terms of other people looking at that work. They identify with it or they don't, you know. And I think the more people identify with what you're doing, you know, what's coming through you, then you're successful as an artist, you know.
Right. And often people can't say quite why a work speaks to them, or why a book or a poem somehow has that power to say what they're feeling or express what they're feeling, but it's there. And I think one of the important things for us to do, and what we're trying to do in some of the more public meetings we're doing, is to be able to connect artists to a broader community. I think probably that's one of our, that's really, I think, our core mission, is to connect individual artists, the organizations that present their work, with as many people as possible, to help people understand or meet, experience artists and their work, and to see that it's not about the, you know, buying expensive tickets to see things. It's having that connection with the perceptions that the artists have that can help them with their lives individually, but also to create a better community.
Mm-hmm. How do you see the political situation here in terms of Bridgeport, the policymakers relating to the artists? Is there a conduit there that can be worked out in some way?
Well, I would say we need that Arts Council. We are the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, works with 15 towns. We actually are the Cultural Alliance of Coastal Fairfield County. There's another organization, the Cultural Alliance of Western Connecticut, that serves the northern part of Fairfield County. We're an agent of the Connecticut Office of the Arts, but we work with 15 towns, from Greenwich to Shelton. And, you know, part of what we do is to try to connect what's going on with all the towns, so that they can, the residents can see what's, you know, in Greenwich you can see what's going on in Fairfield and in Shelton, and sort of to mix it up a bit. But we really rely on bodies within each individual town, which that we hope are doing on a more local level what we're trying to do on a more regional level. And there used to be an Arts Council in Bridgeport that did that job, and we will support any efforts to bring that body together again, stressing that it should be an agent that pulls together all of the neighborhoods, that has representatives from all of the many neighborhoods in Bridgeport, connects to the business community, and of course to the individual artist and the artist nonprofits. I mean, it really should be the hub, and that brings together the neighborhoods, the industry, the business, the arts, and the city, our elected officials. And at the moment, that's not happening. And from the meeting that we organized this last Wednesday as a preliminary to our Creative Placemaking Conference that we're doing at the end of January, we heard that expressed in many, many ways, the sense that there was a lot of siloism in terms of subcultures, different neighborhoods not coming together, and we need that
so
coordination
the art
and leadership.
Could, the Art Council could bring that together.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and
it's
should be on this Art Council?
Well, representatives from the neighborhoods, the NRZs, I think, representatives of business, representatives from some of the cultural institutions, at least a couple of artists, individual artists, a body that really represents the economic and spiritual life of Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of any other group that would do that. I mean, you know, Suzanne Kachmar is doing a wonderful job here with the Bridgeport Art Trail, but that's, I think we need a council that's even bigger and more representative of this incredibly rich life that we've got here in Bridgeport. I mean, we can do what we can to encourage that, but as I said, we are working with 15 different towns.
Mm-hmm.
And
so if we had a representative from each area on the Arts Council,
mm-hmm.
If we went around and spearheaded those people, and I'm just thinking on air of how it would be possible. If anybody out there has some ideas, please let us know. But I think that that is a great idea, because Arts Council can kind of spearhead and guide things along, I think, because then
right.
Everybody's represented.
Well, it could be a hub. It shouldn't celebrate itself. It should celebrate the community,
mm-hmm.
and find different ways of bringing the community together. And it could also eventually be a conduit for some financial assistance to get more coordinated activities mm-hmm. going, I think, mm-hmm. across the community. And I think that's probably the big challenge with one of the big challenges with Bridgeport at the moment culturally is to be able to connect all of the different activities that are going up so they understand that they really are part of the basically the same enterprise, the mm-hmm. same
fabric of the community,
which is improving Bridgeport, bringing all the pieces mm-hmm. together mm-hmm. And making it the thriving center that we all feel is right there.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, you heard it here. So if you have any ideas out there about how we can put together an art council representing all of the different communities, please let us know. I think it's a great idea and a step forward in the right direction, because we do need that to make Bridgeport a really, truly serious art center. So thank you, David. I appreciate having this opportunity to talk with you and listen to your ideas.
Well, it's been great, Adja, and I think this is a terrific way of relaunching our Spotlight on Arts and Culture series. We'll be back a month from now, I think January the 8th. We are planning to have some economic development officers from a number of our towns who will be working with us on this conference. We're calling it Shaping Community, January 23rd and 24th, which will be in the Stepping Stones Museum in Norwalk. And we hope to have as many representatives of individual artists, the cultural organizations from as many of our 15 towns as we can bring together at that one point. So thank you very much, Adja.
You're welcome.
And I will look forward to speaking with you all again in a month's time. Just a reminder that there will be a podcast of this conversation. You can plug in to wpkn.org and look for our Spotlight on Arts and Culture. So this is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, bidding you farewell until this time next month.